This is a Beanbag Chair Media production.
Hi guys, and welcome to Anime Noise.
I'm Garrett. I'm a performing musician by trade, graduated with a bachelor's degree in music production, and have been binging anime for almost 2 decades.
And I'm Emily. I am a classically trained violinist and have been indulging in the animes since I was a wee little human.
And this is an anime review podcast, where we help the new viewer decide where they want to start while taking the super fan on a deep dive into the overlooked realm of music and sound effects. Welcome back to another episode of
Anime Noise. Oh, you went low.
Yeah, I had, to mix it up.
God,
Sometimes I feel
it.
Like I accidentally do the exact same thing as I did before.
You're feeling it.
I was feeling it. So today, guys, we are here to talk to you about a really surprisingly intense sort of show with an incredible, a very, very fucking incredible OST that's as colorful and beautiful and vibrant and terrifying as the anime.
Super terrifying. Actually, most of the OST for this particular anime was quite dark. Most of it. We're doing Made in Abyss, guys.
Yeah.
This was pushed, and I feel like it was an aggressive push by the end there. But I don't know if you remember from my stories a while back, I was at a market and I picked up that fucking cool ass trippy girl.
Oh, the melting girl.
The melting girl.
Yeah. That print.
Yeah.
The art print. That was super cool.
From Rigel. Now she has an art page and then she has a personal page. Sue is her name. And she had wanted us to do this anime like right off the bat. And she said that it was something that she does to get really creative and that inspires her. And guys, I have to agree. I mean, the last song put me in tears. I didn't want to tell Garrett because I would have started crying. So I didn't.
I could see it.
I asked
if you were crying and you're like, no.
No, no.
No.
I don't cry. I'm a straight up bitch. Bitches don't cry.
My eyes are sweating.
You're a bitch.
You're a fucking bitch. That's how she responded. Are you crying? You're a fucking bitch.
I have to say though, this anime probably looks like the most kid and like forward anime that you will ever watch from the outside, from everything you see. But in reality, this is not a kid.
It's far from
show.
It.
This
it's,
is
don't show it to your kids.
Don't watch it with your children because they will have nightmares. This has a lot of dark elements. It is so good.
So fucking good. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Actually, stop this right now and go watch it because we're going to probably spoil some stuff.
Spoiler warning. I was actually thinking about that when I was like writing out some of this research. I was like, man, this can be taken in a lot of directions. But you know what? Spoiler warning.
Yeah.
Because it's probably going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right, Emily, start us off.
All right. So Made in Abyss has 13 episodes at about 24 minutes each. It was officially decided on May 5th that there will be a season 2. This is not a rumor. It is official.
It's a fucking official.
This originally aired July 2017 to September 2017 and falls under the genres of adventure, sci-fi, fantasy, and psychological.
I would totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is, there's a lot of questions I still
so
have.
So many questions.
So many answers I need. To give you guys a little bit of a background on this, an orphaned girl, Riko, lives in the town of Orth, which surrounds a strange giant hole called the Abyss. In hopes of finding her long lost mother deep within the Abyss, Riko journeys with her new robot friend, Reg, into the depths of the unknown on an uncharted adventure.
Rah.
And you said this was really hard to summarize.
It was super hard to summarize.
Yeah,
without without giving a spoiler, it was really hard to summarize.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
No spoilers yet. You guys are in the clear, but there will be some, I'm
probably
sure.
Definitely once we get to the OST.
Oh yeah. There's too much to describe in the OST. It was so colorful.
Yeah.
I need to describe, like, I have to put it to the scenes. There's some scenes that I don't even know where the fucking OST, like, belongs.
I don't either, but I think they did such a good job at incorporating it in. When we were listening to it, I told Garrett, I was like, I've heard all of this stuff. I've heard it all, but...
This is an OST that you need to listen to, like, 3, 4, 5, shit. You could listen to it 20 times and not get all that you need to out of it. Like, this is one of those... OSTs that like you could just listen to over and over again forever.
I have proof of this because it is still playing in my car.
It's still playing
when
in your car.
When you pull up Spotify, Made in Abyss is still playing. And I've been in my car a good amount of times.
It's too fucking good.
Yeah. No, it is.
Well, let's get the fucking credits out of the way so we can talk about this music.
We've talked about it enough already. Well, let's actually talk about it.
Yeah.
So Made in Abyss was licensed by Sentai Filmworks. We know everything about them. I'm not even going to go into it. The studio was Kinema Citrus, which this is the first time we've covered Kinema Citrus. They do Codebreaker, Barakamon, The Rising of the Shield Hero, and Review Starlight.
Which we still haven't finished yet.
Yeah, we were recommended that, and we are having a hard time getting through that
it's,
one.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to shit talk it. It is what it is. It was directed by Masayui Kojima. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly.
Masayui.
That's much better. Anyway.
Got to separate out those syllables.
Oh, fuck. It's thunderstorming right now. And it terrifies me. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to just interrupt this here because it terrifies me when there are thunderstorms because... I was struck by lightning one time.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to tell you guys that story because my buddy and I, lead singer of my band, Forrest, were in the recording studio. And this was in Georgia, southern Georgia, North Florida at the time. And we've been through millions of thunderstorms. I'm from Kansas originally. So, like, I've been around fucking thunderstorms and shit. Who hasn't, right?
Right.
The lightning struck, like, it felt like it was right on our house. It turns out it was the next house over, but it came through.
Like the current?
Yeah,
the electricity?
Yeah, it's called I think it's second degree lightning strike for lack of, I don't think that's actually
only
right.
Only you, Garrett. Only you.
But it came through our electricity at the house that we were recording in. And, I had my phone in my hand and it was attached to the wall. I was charging my phone, playing fucking Pokemon Go and, got electrocuted, like, severely electrocuted. It's what I imagine a defibrillator would feel like.
It makes a lot of sense.
What makes a lot of sense?
I think you know.
No, I don't know.
You got electrocuted. That's why you're all fucked up in the brains.
Oh, you bitch. That was mean. That was a low blow.
Was it a low blow?
Here. Cheers. That was good. asshole.
You know I love you.
Yeah, that was good. But yeah, so now that producer that we were working with never records in a thunderstorm ever. He shuts that shit down.
I don't blame him.
And because his shit got fried. He like lost $20,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah. So you know that Garrett loves you because we are still going to record through this thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. It's going to scare the fuck out of me. But back to the director. Masayui Kojima has also worked on Piano no Mori, his first feature film, Monster, Gunslinger Girl, just the storyboard, or worked on the storyboard. And he played a role in the key animation process for Black Lagoon, which I still have yet to see and I've heard so much about.
Yeah, same. I still want to watch Piano no Mori.
Yeah, we got to do another. We haven't done a movie in a while.
I know. It's been hard. These people keep requesting so many things.
I know. There's so many things that we have to get through before we even get to a movie again.
I know.
That's okay. Well, on to the sound effects. The sound effects were done by Toru Noguchi. He is a heavy hitter in the anime
He's
world.
He's a heavy hitter.
Heavy fucking hitter in the anime world. He has worked on the Studio Ghibli films, The Cat Returns, Howl's Moving Castle, and Spirited Away. He's also worked on Weathering With You and Neon Genesis Evangelion. This dude is a fucking legend.
Yeah.
And I can totally see that. I mean, the sound effects in this were top notch. Top fucking notch.
Well, the sound director was Yo Yamada. He worked on Banana Fish, Review Starlight, Sarazanmai.
We never get that one right.
I know.
I know we've said it before.
Sarazanmai. I think that's right, but I could be wrong. And Black Butler.
Yes.
And the original creator of the manga was Akihito Tsukushi. He did the character design for Fairy Musketeers. He did Marulk's Every Day and Star Strings Yori. He hasn't really done a whole lot.
Yeah, I haven't heard of any of those.
Nope.
I have not heard of any of those, but he nailed it with this one.
Nailed it.
That's for fucking sure. Well, let's get on to the music shit. We're done with the credits.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're done.
Sweet.
Let's go.
All right. The intro, the opener, Bum-ba-da. Deep in Abyss by Miyu Tomita and Mariah. Is it Mariah?
I think that actually is Mariah.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, the I in Japanese is pronounced E.
I know. It could be.
Maria,
I don't freaking know.
Mariah Issei. Whichever one it is. Somebody please correct us. We welcome that.
We welcome and please correct us.
Yeah. This is going to be a shit storm for pronunciation. Probably like it always is, honestly.
Yeah, it is. We're the same.
This song was released in August of 2017 as a single along with another song by Miyu Tomita. It comes with an instrumental version as well. It reached number 38 on the Oricon, which is about right, I would say. Maybe, I don't even say it got up that high, honestly. It's still a good song, though. It was sung by the voice actresses for Reg and Rico.
Yeah.
Kind of like the fucking outro.
Exactly like the outro.
But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's listen to the song.
Let's do it.
That key line was fucking sick.
Oh, I know. I wish there were more of those kind of creatures.
I like the chord progression, too.
Mm-hmm. I like how this song, like, holds so much adolescence in it because it's by the voice actresses.
But it still has a ton of energy in it.
Yeah.
Really cool breakdown. I love the string section.
Uh-huh.
Way to resolve it, too. That was nice.
An abrupt resolve, too. Didn't expect it.
Well, I know it says by the voice actresses, or it was sung by the voice actresses for Reg and Rico, but who wrote it? Was that Kevin Pinkin, too?
That was not. The outro. He wrote the outro.
He wrote
but
the
he
outro.
Didn't write the intro.
He didn't write the intro. Mm-hmm. Who? They wrote it, too?
They did not. So it was written by, let's see. So the lyrics are by Hotaru and Kanata Nakamura, and the composition is by the composition and arrangement are by Kanade Yuk, Masahiro Aoki, Hato Kanade Yuk again for the arrangement, and Takuya Watanabe.
I feel like I've heard those names before.
Some of those names I'm sure we have heard before.
Okay, well, we're going to try to look that up and add a little bit of what else they've done in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that song was pretty good. I'm not normally into the whole like poppy electronic
you are
kind
not.
Of openers.
No.
I'm very rarely into those. But that one was really good. I liked the arrangement on it. The chord progression was cool. And I think it was a very well, it was composed very well, and they just used, you know, pop instrumentation, just super modern pop instrumentation for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Let's get into some lyrics.
I was going to ask, do you want to hear some lyrics?
Yeah, let's do that.
Do ya?
Oh, I do.
Okay. Well, this song was clearly written for Made in Abyss. The first line, everyone unable to resist goes down in, make those eyes shine brighter than a torch, which they fucking need torches, man. They need some fire.
So use your eyeballs instead of torches.
The destination we are aiming for is deep. We squarely lose our way. The trap of the open-mouthed netherworld. Let's chase the traces of truth. Like, could you get more Made in Abyss-y?
It's made for Made in Abyss.
Yeah.
It was made in Abyss.
The last line is, even if that is a curse, the pulse is the real thing. Never again will the yearning stop.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
I kind of like where it's going, especially with the whole, you know, how the story ended, or at least how season one ended.
Yeah.
With all those questions unanswered.
So many questions.
But I think that without a doubt, the song fits the anime.
Oh, absolutely. I'm here
without
for it.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Even though it was a little pop heavy, a little electronic heavy, it still meshed with the OST enough. Like, it's a bit out there because Kevin Pinkin didn't do it. You know, it's not quite there, but I feel like there's enough there that it still brings it back to
that OST.
Well,
I'm sure that they did that on purpose. I'm sure that those people who did compose and arrange it work for Kinema Citrus, who also worked with Kevin Pinkin to compose all the stuff. So I'm sure that they wanted to keep that element kind of the same.
Yeah, this one was the whole show, especially the sound department, was thought out very, very thoroughly and done really well.
Yeah, and on every aspect.
Every fucking aspect. Okay, well, let's move on to the outro.
Yeah, so don't hate me for not getting this one right.
We're not going to. So I've missed all of them.
So it means left hand of the trip, right hand of the end. Tabi no hidarite, saihate no migite.
You didn't even try on that one.
What do you mean?
I'm playing with you.
Boy, I'm about to fight you.
Your Texas is showing.
Yeah, I feel it today too. Like, for reals.
I bet you do.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Feeling real Texas.
Real Texas.
Real Texas. This was also by Miku Tomita Maria Ise. Mariah Ise. And
Maria.
Shiori Izawa.
Cool.
Yeah. So those are the voice actresses of, again, Rag and Rico, and then Nanachi. So my cute little bunny chick.
Yeah.
This song was released in 2007 of August. And
2017?
2017. Did I say 7?
You said 2007.
Oh, man. Going way back.
It's not 2007. Why don't we try that one again?
Yeah. So this song was released August of 2017 as its own single. It was heard episodes 2 through 9 with only the voice actresses for Reg and Rico, and then joined by Shiori Izawa for episodes 10 through 13. So you get two.
They waited till the bunny girl was introduced, or like the episode.
Which kind of made sense. Yeah, which kind of makes sense.
Yep.
So the album and... The album slash single includes a variety of possibilities that each vocal artist could create. So there's a solo of Nanachi just singing it. There's a solo of Reg just singing it. There's both of them, all three of them, and then an instrumental version.
Okay. You got every type.
It's ridiculous.
Just in case you want to sample it.
Just,
you know?
In case.
Just in case.
And that's it for credentials. I'm ready to freaking listen.
And you said Kevin Pinkin wrote this one. Who else worked on it?
So let's see. And actually, that is inaccurate.
He didn't work on this one.
Somebody told me that he did.
Fucking internet.
I know. Actually, you know what? I know what it is.
What?
I know what it is.
What?
So I'm confusing the intro and outro when I was looking it up. Somebody also had the insert songs. Kevin Pinkin wrote.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So Kevin Pinkin didn't write either of these songs. But the lyrics are by Yukari Hashimoto and Kanata Nakamura. The composition is by Yukiri Hashimoto, essentially wrote this song. He did lyrics, composition, and arrangement. And then with composition, he was helped by Takeshi Matsumoto. And arrangement, he was helped by a group called Effie.
Effie.
E-F-F-Y.
Okay.
Let's listen.
Let's listen to it. Here it is.
This is the song you hear when you want to go on a journey. Let's go on an adventure.
It's very, very cheesy adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Like a backyard adventure.
Yeah.
It's very carnival-y.
Yeah.
I love what they did with the percussion. I don't know if they're vibraphones.
Oh, in the very back? What you hear out of the right?
Back. Yeah,
right,
the very chimey kind of stuff. It's panned left and right as it moves across the notes. That's really cool. It's a heavy snare. Very deep.
That was also an abrupt end. Jeez.
Very abrupt.
Didn't let that hold out at all?
Not at all.
You know what I hated about this?
What?
Is that they freaking bring in Nanachi. And you're just waiting.
Oh, in the outro sequence?
Yes.
The animation?
And then they don't even bring her in until three episodes until the freaking series is done.
Yeah, that's you're really confused. You're like, who is this character? I think they do
bullshit.
That to tease you.
I fucking hate it.
They do that to tease you to keep you watching.
That
Not that you would need to be teased.
I wouldn't need to be teased. That's for goddamn
sure. This fucking show is intense.
Fuck.
Intense as fuck. All right. Lyric time.
Yeah. So... the glittering waves that float in the sky, let's bundle them and build a rainbow bridge, a dangerous foothold, a slope we slide on, a signpost of the past and future. It's the first line.
Okay.
It's definitely an adventure.
Yeah. It was extra cheesy in this outro, though.
Oh, this is a cheesy song. Super short lyrics, so I'm just going to read them all. Second verse is your left hand with my right hand, join it, connect us, and let's begin. I am always beside you in the past, the present, and also the future. So let's walk along without hesitating.
Did this song make it on Oricon? I know you didn't put that in your notes.
No, it did not.
Okay. That's kind of what I expected. Wasn't sure.
It sure didn't. Pile up multicolored dreams. Where will we head toward tomorrow? If I can be together with you, the world will begin to shine. Let's search for flowers that bloom at the ends of the earth.
Well, the lyrics are pretty.
The lyrics are pretty. I like them. I think the song fits, though.
I think the song definitely fits. I don't necessarily like it that much.
No, it's not one of those ones that's catchy, but it's like,
It also is. It does one of those things that kind of like, you need some cheese, especially towards the end of this, and the gore and the hardcore gruesomeness of this fucking show towards the end of the season is you need something to ease you out of there. Like, holy fuck, what did I just watch? Like, I watched something super traumatic for two kids, not for anybody, not just two kids. And I'm gonna need a little bit of I'm gonna need you to ease
me out
of that.
Like a breather.
I
still very much stand by my statement of when you have a very dark anime that you need something that's going to kind of like ease you out of it. Now, there are certain situations that I think that should change. Now, are there times where I don't want a happy song at the end of this? Yes. And that's the only thing that is that makes me be like, there are a lot of dark things.
That's why I like the idea that I still am not over this idea, and nobody's really done it except for listeners
except
on the outro.
Listeners.
Make make the intros and outros a fucking album. Make them a playlist.
Yeah.
Sell me the album at the end of the the series once it's all released. And like,
and you know what? They can't even begin to tell us that they're not like willing to repeat ending songs because they do it all the time.
Yeah.
They do it all the time.
Exactly. And if you have a, you know, if it's Naruto, I get not wanting to do fucking 720 different songs.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But
no, I feel that.
You know, can you have an album for a season, you know? And if you have, I don't know, 60 episodes in a season, can't you reuse songs to fit kind of the outro for
yeah,
that
one?
Yeah,
it would make our lives so much easier if you just like had a max of 10 songs that you could use.
Well, I see what you're saying about the podcast. I disagree with that. I want the experience. I want the fucking experience. But yes, all in all, I think this song fits
yes,
the anime.
I agree.
So let's move on to the reviews.
It's Review City,
Review
bitches.
City, bitch.
Hell yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and give the lowest rating I could find. This one didn't have any one stars at
had
all.
Had no one
at
stars.
At all that I could find.
Zero
across the
one
board,
star reviews.
Across the board.
Wow.
Yes. So this guy gave it a 5. And it kind of sounds...
This is the worst one you could find?
This is the worst one I could find. And I think he kind of inaccurately rated it because I think he leans way more on the negative side.
But he gave it a 5 stars.
I know, out of 10.
Oh, out of 10. I was like, what?
Yeah, out of 10.
Okay.
So I feel 50%. Like he gave it 50%, but I feel like he actually should have rated it probably like a 2 or a 3 based on how he's talking about it.
Okay.
So you can tell me if you agree or not. So he begins by saying, 13 episodes... 5 out of 10. Quick impression. The annoying Japanese style of writing loli or moe characters that scream and cuddle each other every 2 seconds is boring and almost deserves to be thrown away instantly. However, the phenomenal art and world building makes us want to watch a little more. But by Newton, I almost dropped this anime. Which, if you are considering dropping an anime, it's not 5-star worthy.
Well... Yeah, but 5 out of 10, 50%.
Yeah.
So clearly he considered dropping it and was like, all right, I'll keep going.
I know. Dummy. Rico, main character. Actually, he said main character.
Character. We knew what he meant.
Is that spoiled child who has lost the notion of ridicule and the real, putting those who love her in unnecessary danger through sheer selfishness.
Spoiled?
Yeah. I don't know about spoiled. She's an orphan. Furthermore, the anime carries an interesting and rich world with shallow characters, Reg, and little interesting conflict
shallow
between them.
Shallow characters?
And
he's
why
a fucking
you...
robot, half human, half robot
and also,
thing
why
that appeared out of the abyss, and nobody knows where the fuck he's from. He doesn't get affected by the abyss.
And also, why does there need to be conflict between anybody? There's enough conflict with the abyss. Why does he need to have his own conflict?
Also, there's a ton of conflict with the fucking, with the other lady, the other white whistle.
Yeah, believe me, she's got enough fucking conflict.
There's
of
tons own. Of conflict. This guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking
That's
about.
What I'm saying. So then
or
he
started writing the review before he finished the anime.
Probably not. So the good animation, good fluidity of sounds and sound composition, an interesting world. The bad. Now, this is where I'm starting to, like, hate people on the internet.
We can't have any more hate.
I know.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. The bad. Disgusting representation of loli and moe-type characters. Annoying main character. Shallow relationships and bad conflicts that make you not care about the characters. Fan service for disgusting weebs. Overall, a slightly horrible anime.
Well... So, I don't know where you're from, reviewer, but what you find as loli fan service wasn't taken sexually by anybody
well,
else.
Well, the thing, so he said disgusting representation of loli type characters, which I'm sorry, they're freaking kids. Nobody's naming them loli except you. This person reviewer, I'm not talking to you.
No,
but
no, no, no.
I know that. But
so
then the
I know
fan
what he's talking
service
about, though. I know what he's talking about.
Is
so
the humiliation.
The humiliation tactic of this orphanage. It doesn't matter what kid gets in trouble. They string them up naked.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sorry.
It's a humiliation tactic, but in other countries around the world, like, people getting strung up isn't always a sexual fetish. Okay.
Yeah, and also, don't kink shame people. That's rude. So, also... It's not fan service.
It's not fan service. None of it was sexual.
Nothing in this anime is fan service. There is zero fan service. So this guy clearly doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. He just doesn't know what he's talking about. So I get where why he would think that, but that is that's just somebody who's not very culturally adept with other.
I suppose you're right. It was just like it. I don't know. It just got me. I'm like, man, it's people like this person right here that people are like, oh, anime is for kids.
I don't think so. I think that guy's just I think people are just people are just dumb. I don't think anybody thinks that this anime is for kids. That's for sure. But anyway, that was like the worst review you could find.
That was the worst review I could find.
That ain't bad.
I actually had two.
That's not the worst review I've ever heard.
I know. But that's how good this show is. Nobody had anything bad to say about it.
Well, let's get to the good shit. I want to hear what somebody nice had to say about it.
All right. When I began the series, I had no idea what it was about. The premise of the anime is a breath of fresh air drawing you in as a very innocent story of children exploring a big hole and looking for treasures. Almost slice of life-like. As you dive deeper, you see that it is much more with themes that would move almost any viewer. The characters and artwork at first seems very geared towards children as the main characters themselves are still children. At times, the artwork gets a bit blurry. But for the most part, the world shown and the details in the backgrounds, objects, and creatures are rich and leave the viewer wanting to discover more about them. The sound particularly drew me in. The first time Hanazive Cardina played in the background, there were chills sent down my back at how beautiful and fitting it was for the scene. Despite being children and despite living in a world almost alien to our own, there were themes and situations in this series that forces even an adult viewer to relate to. I was brought close to tears by the final episode, and I can't wait for the next season.
I can't either.
I can't. No, I need it now.
But I need it right the fuck
I
now.
Thought that was a really beautiful review. So thank you.
That was
you.
A great review.
Thank you, anonymous reviewer, for that beautiful review.
That was a great fucking review.
Yeah.
Cool. Ooh. All right. Now, on to my favorite part and the part I've been looking forward to the most, especially from this anime. Mm-hmm. Let's get on to the OST. The OST was released in September of 2017 on the Kodokawa label. It has 52 tracks with 113 minute runtime, two discs. Disc one is 25 tracks and disc two is 27 tracks. P.S. Disc two, in my opinion, is the
was
better
the best
one.
Oh no, it was. And
but that doesn't take away anything from disc one. The whole thing was amazing. There were three different recording sessions that took place to record and produce the soundtrack. The Vienna Synchron Stage Orchestra, also heard in Pacific Rim Uprising, Ghost in the Shell, the live-action version, and Rim of the World and Over the Moon.
And Over the Moon was that one that just came out on Netflix not too long ago.
Yeah, I need to watch that one too. Mm-hmm. The other recording session was the Boston Video Game Orchestra, also heard in Final Fantasy XV and Kingdom Hearts. And then the third was in Melbourne, the Strawberry Hill Music, who have also been heard in Cowboy Bebop, Final Fantasy XV, Wolf's Reign.
And in Melbourne, that's where all of the vocals were recorded. So all they do there is vocals.
Oh, okay.
So that's all of the random vocals that you hear throughout the thing and the insert songs were recorded in Melbourne.
Yeah, they did a great fucking job.
Yeah.
This OST accurately, very, very accurately, brings out all the beauty and color and terror and adrenaline of the abyss.
Which when we go over this OST, there are two insert songs that are on it as well, and so it's actually worth noting these OST songs, because the first insert song you hear is the Underground River.
But it's the opening version.
So there's two different versions. One's on disc one and one's on disc two. Disc one has the TV version and disc two has the full version. I very, 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 very much like the TV version. It fits the scene so well.
So well.
So well. And so it is definitely worth worth noting, and also the Hanasive Karadina with Takeshi Saito. Takeshi Saito isn't really that known as a vocalist. There are many different Takeshi Saitos out there. There's a mathematician, there's a violinist, all kinds of
people. I feel like, yeah, that name
it sounds really familiar.
Really, really familiar.
And then Underground River was with Raj Ramaya, and he has been a part of so many things. So many things.
Let's hear him.
He's been a part of Dragon Ball Z, Power Rangers, Pokemon, Tower of God, Cowboy Bebop, Walking Dead, Gravity, Glee, Digimon.
Like, God damn.
He's been all over the place.
All over the fucking place, for sure.
Yeah. So I loved the song as the kind of almost unofficial OP. That was a really nice way to come into this anime.
Yes, it was super, super pretty. And there's a lot of questions that you have right out the gate. And I think it kind of grabs you and brings you in even more.
Yeah. And it's like kind of explorative of the world and the sequence that it's used in.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
You're like feeling the beauty and like vastness.
Yes.
You feel it with the song in that scene.
And I think this episode might be a little bit of a long one for you guys because there is so much to go over in this OST. I think that we should start them off maybe with that opener. And I'm put that in
Underground
air quotes.
River?
Yeah. The opening version of Underground River.
I
think
so
this
down
is
for
the first. It's not obviously not the first
Actually,
piece that you
we
hear.
We have to go over the composer.
Oh,
we
shit.
Have to talk about Kevin Pinkin.
My bad. I got way ahead of myself.
I almost forgot Kevin Pinkin. We got to give this man credit.
Yeah, he's too fucking good not to give credit to him. Yeah, so Kevin Pinkin has been composing since 2011. He's a British-Australian composer who got interested in composing anime and video game soundtracks from listening to the themes from the game Metroid Prime. Fucking great game. He has collaborated with the Final Fantasy franchise composer Nobu Uematsu for many different games. He graduated from the Royal College of Music in 2015 with a master's in composition for screen and soon teamed up with the Kinema Citrus studio to compose the score for Norn 9 and Under the Dog OVA. He has won two Crunchyroll Anime Awards, one in 2017 for Made in Abyss, and one in 2020 for Tower of God,
we
which
got to watch
I can't
that one.
Wait. Yeah, I saw that happen live.
Yay.
That was, yeah. So I can't wait to do that one too. That's actually how I found out about Kevin Pinkin
yeah.
and was kind of why I was really excited to do this episode, especially after we watched show.
Yeah.
In an interview with Anime News Network, Pinkin says his inspiration for the music comes from his time in art school. The inspiring genres range from classical to contemporary rock, but ultimately a conglomeration of different styles. And you can definitely hear that in this OST as well. He has also composed scores for Eden, Rising of the Shield Hero, and the games Florence, which won the British Academy Games Awards for the music, Necro Barista. That game is exactly what it sounds like.
It is literally a bunch of baristas who come back as having to battle the living dead.
Fun. That sounds like a fun game.
Yeah. And Florence is about this. It's like an RPG game that goes through like this chick who meets a cello player in the park. And basically it's like you play as Florence with her new cello friend.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also did the music for Demo. A rhythm game. Yeah. Now I got to look that one up too. Sweet. All right. Kevin Pinkin, you're an amazing man. And I'm excited that we just got you out of the way so we can listen to your freaking music, man. Let's get right into it. This one is the insert song.
Underground River.
Underground River.
Like, what a fucking way to come into this. I love it. I love this fucking track.
Traveling the ether back to you, to a land so far away.
and his voice.
I don't know if he's using Rhodes. Sounds like he is. Mm-hmm. But it's so... in the background, like, it's so mellow. Yeah. It is so fucking mellow.
This song is really mellow.
And it allows the other things to just, like, come out and grow out of that song. Yeah. Or out of that Rhodes tone.
And they kept it really cohesive with the rest of the OST, too. The use of dynamics.
The dynamics are amazing. And there's so many different colors. Yeah. I'm going to use that word a lot. There's so many colors in this.
Well, it's funny that you say that. And after this song ends, there's something about his color palette that Kevin Pankin said in an interview.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And that's how it fucking ends, guys.
The dynamics, like I said, like Emily said, they're perfect.
They create a whole different vibe.
But they even like crescendo upwards, and but it like breathes and pulses upwards, and then there's like multiple movements in the pulse on the way up.
Yeah.
And they hold it and plateau and then bring it back up again. It's very, very cool how they did this.
And we've talked a lot about other OSTs that we've listened to that lack dynamic. So it is so refreshing to come to an OST like this that brings you that kind of like vibrancy.
Especially with songs that I noticed that have a kind of a lack in dynamic are mostly songs with looped drum beats.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I've found is lacking in dynamics. But this one obviously uses electronic drum tones.
Yeah.
And everything about it was amazing. Like the way they used it, the way they brought it in, it was also different than, you know, a standard issue kick and a white hat sounding snare. You know, it had a lot of different elements to it. So, and it really captured the tone of the Abyss. And the curiosity of it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, no. So what I was saying while that song was playing about the interview. So he did an interview with Anime News Network. We talked about it a little bit earlier when we were discussing the OST itself. But the interviewer asked what sort of instructions and materials were you given in regards to making tracks for Made in Abyss? And he said he got all the manga books and a lot of background and concept art that he could reference. And he said, trying to match the visual color palette and the musical color palette was really important to me. And then something that you hear a lot through this OST is, for example, looking at how the foregrounds and backgrounds were so juxtaposed gave me ideas such as writing for small ensemble of instruments, but recorded in a large space. And I actually starred a song in the OST that I really heard that on.
I probably starred the exact same one.
Yeah.
It's really cool how a composer like that approaches a show like this, an anime like this, anime especially, because it's an amazing piece of art. It's not, I know that filmography and stuff like that, you have all the camera angles and light and stuff, and that in itself is beautiful art, but there's also, you know, that level of realism that's there. Like, there's only so much you can do with what we've been given here on planet Earth. Now, when you draw and you can create your own colors and create your own lines and build a world, now you have to approach this entire super imaginative, vibrant world, and you have to approach that same thing sonically. You know, you have to figure out how to get that into the music, and that is where the talent kind of just explodes out of here. With Kevin Pinkin's work.
Yeah. And for those of you that don't quite understand what that might mean by having small ensembles of instruments and recorded in a large space, he actually goes on to say that it was to act as a metaphor for Rico and Reg exploring in this humongous expanse of cave system. So them recording a small amount of instruments would sound so far away and vast in a very large room.
Yes.
And so you're getting a bunch of different dimensions that you wouldn't get as if the microphone were attached to your instrument.
I mean, it's just like, think about a giant stadium that you've been in, you know, if you're sitting in the stadium and let's say it's sports, you're watching fucking football and you hear a really hard tackle, but it sounds obviously super far away. Now, if you get a little bit closer or if you hear it on TV, sounds a lot different because the microphone's a lot closer. So it's just using the microphone as your ears and making it a little more, just using actual acoustics instead of acoustic effects.
Yeah. We're going to put the interview and link in our show notes for this episode. So I highly encourage you to go look at that interview.
Definitely read the interview. Especially
if you love hearing about composers and how music is made and that really interests you, because he's very colorful about his words too. He describes it in detail. So I highly encourage it. So it'll be there. It'll be waiting.
Yes. All right. Let's get back to the OST, and I'm a little lost about where to go next here.
Yeah,
because,
I don't really know.
I guess we kind of skipped our overall notes.
That's true.
So let's
go back to the overall notes.
Go back
to that.
I mean, it was just such a rich score that I had a hard time analyzing it. I need to listen to it two or three times. One thing I did notice, though, one of my favorite things, he layers so many different timbres together. And what I mean by that is, like, in particular, the melody itself, the lead line, he likes to, whether the melody was written or it started on the piano, let's say, he will add in, it may be a percussive element, the pads, he adds like two or three, four things on top of it and doubling the melody with different instruments. And it just makes it sound so cool. It gives it so much character. You know, it makes it really extra expressive.
Well, you know what I put as my overall note?
What?
These tracks keep surprising me. A lot of great blending / overlapping of moods or emotion.
Yeah.
That was my first overall note that
Same.
I took.
That was my first overall note.
Oh, that's so funny.
I think it's really cool that the way he does that with the melody, especially because obviously people think to enhance a melody, let's fucking add a harmony to it. But no, you can enhance a melody by doubling the melody.
By adding another instrument
or two. Double the fucking melody, make it piano and marimbas, you know what I mean? Some percussion, a drum, like some sort of drum, chimes, bells, anything. He does that time and time again. And what's cool about that too is when the melody is moving along over the top of all of the harmony, and when you add all these different layers of melody, the harmony reacts differently too. It behaves different. And the cool thing is when you add two or three or four layers of the same melody, now you can come out. You can take one away, add another one, and that can become the main part of that melody.
Yeah.
You know, it can move and transition between the orchestra seamlessly. So I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, I did as well.
Another overall note that I had was it's kind of scary all the time. There's a little bit of tension to it almost at all times.
Did you like copy my notes?
No, I didn't copy your notes. You were sitting all the way over there.
I said, the OST screams terror, but yet still retains the beauty.
You're copying my notes, obviously. The third note I had was so much color. Again, I'm using that word. And then I did have another one that was actually a song that I listened to on disc two that made me want to copy the notes up to the overall notes section here. It was number 26, the second to last song on disc two. His use of surrounding the piece with familiar, like inconsistent rhythmic elements.
Was this Pathway?
Yeah.
Okay.
He uses those elements in a different way, almost like the opposite way that I would consider using the bass. So for that song in particular, I believe it was that song, he had this bass act very pitchy. So it would like, it would drop and then it would literally pitch downwards, you know, way down.
Yeah.
And when it kept doing that over and over again, I was like, that's not really what a bass is technically meant for, at least in pop music and stuff like that. But what he did to keep the rest of it consistent, normally it's the bass and drums that are keeping it consistent. He uses other rhythmic elements like an arpeggiated piano line or a synth line. And by doing that, by keeping that harmony consistent, it allows the other parts that aren't technically or are, that are supposed to do that job technically, it allows them to do anything that they want to. It breaks the fucking rules. He broke all the rules. He broke the system.
I really liked
that
one.
He won the game.
Reverbed almost with a delay piano right at the beginning of that track, and then it was just beautiful, and then it was such an oxymoronic song. It was like sounded so freaking hopeful and then so dark, and the song's confused like a surprise out of nowhere.
There was so much
fucking
going on.
Confusion.
It was amazing. How many did you have starred, or which ones did you have starred?
Okay. All right. I didn't star any for a long time because I was literally just, I love this piece. And it took until, obviously, number 9, I love. We've already played that for you, though. So, track 12.
Okay.
Track 14.
Okay.
Track 17. Track 19. And then I got to the second disc, and I, again, didn't star anything until number 13. For the violins, and then I wrote this next to it.
Okay.
So we obviously have to play that one.
It's weird. You starred all the exact same ones I did except for like two.
Okay. And then I have 17.
Okay. I didn't star that one.
I had some real Star Wars Death Star vibes from that.
And then
I starred 18.
I did two.
And then I starred 22 for the well-used synthesizers. And then I start number 27 because number 27 is the one that made me cry. And, what a goddamn beautiful song that is.
As I'm reading my notes here, looking at all my stars, it was actually number 25 that did the opposite bass of what I just
said. Oh, the Sabretooth?
Yeah, Sabretooth, the one before Pathway.
Okay.
Still uses those like really cool rhythmic elements to keep it consistent and lets everything else go and break all the rules.
Oh my God. Yeah. So that song, I just want to like point this out because it was fucking
Which one? Sabretooth?
Crazy. Yes.
Sabretooth was ferocious.
I was writing it down and then I looked up at Garrett and I was like, this song is making me write so fast.
I had two or three songs that made me do that.
I did too, but I didn't realize it until I got to this song. Like I was like scratching the paper. I was like,
the way I write
writing.
My notes too. I'm like, I write things that kind of don't, they won't really make sense to anybody else. And they're not full sentences. It's just a bunch of commas, you know?
God, you're the worst.
Yeah. I mean, they're for me. They're my notes. So,
so possessive.
Thank God nobody else has to read these because it is, I got a little out of hand there for some of them, but some of them were like, I literally wrote, this is making me write fast. What the fuck? And then just like kept writing the rest of the notes.
I'm so happy we take notes the same way.
I starred number 3 on disc 1.
Oh,
number 9, number 11, number 14, number 17, and I think that was it for disc 1. Oh, and 24, The Depths of the Abyss. That was good. And then on disc 2, I feel like I had a lot more stars. Let's see, we had...
Disc 2 is where I wrote most of my overall notes.
Disc 2, I starred number 5, number 6, and number 7.
Jesus.
The... reason for that, I think, was because, first of all, number 5 and number 6 are
fucking
polar
crazy.
Opposite. They're polar opposite from each other. Yeah. It was weird that they put these two together. Number 7, Serpent Call? Serpent? Serpent, probably. That one, again, it's intense, but like it was just weird how they put all these together. So 6 and 7 kind of belong together, but then 7 and 8 don't belong together.
Yeah, no.
So Kevin Pinkin, if you were here right now, I would ask you, like, how did you go about putting the OST together in relation to the anime itself? Like, I'm having a hard time following it.
Yeah, no, it was kind of hard to follow in a sense. What helped it move along was the fact that a lot of them had those dark undertones. And so I feel like because of that, it melded okay. But I think it probably was more of like a surprise element. You know, I think if you're thinking about somebody who seems to put a lot of effort into the experience.
Well, I just meant like how the OST is arranged, like My Hero Academia season one. Start to finish, you knew exactly the whole story. I could picture in my head what was happening on the screen every time.
Yeah.
Every single time. And that song, Start to Finish, was the anime season Start to Finish. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what the fuck is happening.
Yeah, that's
here.
What I'm saying. I think that he arranged it in a way that probably doesn't follow the anime. Probably not at all.
I really want to know that.
He's telling his own goddamn story through his music because there's no way somebody like this who can place instruments and dynamics and rhythms and melodies and harmonies in such a way that he did and doesn't think about the way that the OST is arranged.
Yeah.
There's no possible way.
So I also had 13, 18, 23, kind of 24.
Kind of 24.
Whenever I star something, I'll circle the star, and I didn't circle the star.
Oh, okay, I see.
And then Sabretooth, number 25, and Tomorrow, number 27. I almost like starred this whole fucking thing. the one thing I did notice about this, which is also why it was hard to follow,
mm-hmm.
was because this is actually the perfect thing to compare it to last week's episode. Last week's episode, we talked about Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Senpai, mm-hmm. Bunny Girl Senpai. And that one had a very obvious brand, sonic brand for those two and their behavior together.
Right.
And their relationship. It was an obvious motif for them. And I had a very, very tough time discerning the motifs in this OST. I don't know if that was because he didn't really use that many or if it was because they were so intricately woven into the rest of the audio that you just didn't really hear it. Like it would take you two or three times to go, oh, that's fucking Reg's theme or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't really, to me, I did not hear that many repeated motifs. So I can't wait to listen to it again so I can try again.
Speaking of motifs, there was a, I guess it's not really a theme or a motif. It's the way he added in the vocals, like the very tribal sounding vocals,
uh-huh.
and how he like kind of scattered them randomly throughout the track. It wasn't every track and it wasn't every other track, but he just kind of scattered them around it. Like that's why I feel like he just like adds things in as an element of surprise because you never know what's going to fucking come out of the abyss. What's going to come at you.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I bet he did that. The thing with us guys, the way we review this, we watch the anime, follow the story and everything and keep focus on the anime itself. And then we'll go review the OST without watching the anime. And I think we honestly need a third round if we had enough time to go back and like pause, crank up the fucking volume of the anime itself and just like, okay, what's happening in this scene?
Yeah.
Why did he choose this particular instrument or this particular reverb or production technique or whatever it was, this melody for that? Was it an animal? Was it a fucking plant in the background? Was it something moving across the screen? Was
like
it
that's how intriguing that listening to these tracks was. It was just it was a lot of thought.
Incredibly thought out and executed very well. I feel like if I'm trying to do all this stuff, I always get caught up in like, all right, now I'm overthinking this motherfucker. Is this too much? Is this too little? Is this not enough?
But you know
what?
Now
it sounds like shit.
The instrumentalists, the musicians who fucking played on this were on point.
They're amazing.
On point.
And I think part of that, it's the relationship with the composer and the instrumentalist. I mean, if you have a composer that knows or has worked with these people in the past, these performers or this group, then I'm going to know how you play. I'm going to know the style of your playing, and now I can write for
you. So now
you
can write. Yep, that's true.
And I can write something that may challenge you. And by doing that, or I could just be like, you know what? I don't know what to play here. I'm not going to write anything. Here's your chord progression. Yeah. What can you bring me? I know I trust you. So like, give me something cool and then let's work together.
Oh yeah. That's true as well. I fucking loved it. I loved those vocal pieces that he threw in there though. I didn't feel like they were overused or out of place in any of the places he used them. And I use the word randomly very accurately because
felt random.
They came in out of nowhere. You'd be almost through the song and, oh, there's vocals at the end. What?
And that's kind of what I mean by now I want to go back and watch, yeah. Maybe like pick a song or two and go, okay, these vocals are, they seem random without watching the anime. Yeah. I wonder if they actually are.
Yeah. Oh, I need it. I need it.
You got to know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what this whole fucking anime does to you. They did it sonically. They did it visually. They did it storyline-wise. Characterly? Storily? I don't know what the fucking
storily,
word.
Storily, I like that one.
I don't know what the fucking word I'm looking for here is, but...
Before we get into the going with each individual track...
Narrative. That's the word. Never mind. Keep going.
Glad you got there. I want to point out that there was hardly any cheese factor in this OST.
And where it was used, there was a little.
There was a little bit, but even the cheesy shit.
They're still like, what, 12-year-olds?
Yeah.
The main characters?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there needs to be a little bit of cheese. But also, this whole thing is like, okay, these 12-year-olds are, they about to grow up. They're going to learn today. They're going to learn
that
today.
That is very true. But that's what I loved is that he did keep that adolescent fun cheese factor there, but did it in a way that made it super cohesive. You know, some of those OSTs, you have the cheese factor just like comes at you like
that's
nobody's
true.
Business.
There was cheese in the right spots, but there was also like when you wanted innocence but not cheese, mm-hmm. He did that well too.
Yeah.
Where I was sometimes there are some songs that you hear in anime and you're like a bit embarrassed if you were like if that happened to come on in your car and it was blasting at full volume, you'd be like, oh fuck, hopefully nobody saw me do that, even though you're headbanging to the fucking song, but
you know the song.
There's a couple of songs that are just a little too cheesy. This was not that OST.
No,
he used it very sparingly in just the right places.
Yeah, and he didn't really need many opportunities in the anime to give the cheese because there was so much serious shit happening all the time after a certain point. Okay, where do you want to start with this? That was all I had to say about that.
Fuck,
where do you want to start with this?
I think we should start with the ones that we starred together.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should do, well, we can't do them all. We'll be here all fucking night.
That's true. We cannot do them all.
I starred like 25 of them, half the fucking album.
That's unusual for you.
You starred number 9 first, right?
Well, yes, but we already played that.
I know, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So we starred number 9, and that was the first one that we both starred, and we've already played it for you. Wonderful. What's the next one you did?
I did 12.
I did 11. Okay, keep going.
And then I did 14.
14. I also did 14.
Okay, well, that's within the first. There we go.
2 months. All right, let's play number 14.
I wrote, I bet 2 months feels like 2 years.
Yeah. I love how the keys started and kept bringing back those two chords and the pattern that they used for those two chords in particular. It was really unexpected. It had an unexpected twist.
Yeah.
I put, what a great piece with an exclamation point. Cool vocals and really awesome sounding key bass.
Yeah, so I said that the song kind of stayed pretty monotonous at the very beginning, and then the vibe just completely changes on you. The rumbled key bass underneath had me feeling all kinds of fucking anxious.
Yes, so let's play that one. This one's 2 months. I'll try to point out as best I can the chords and the pattern that he used. I'm sure you guys will hear it. You guys got good ears. And this is the consistent rhythm that I'm talking about. With everything else around it, it almost feels random, but the consistent rhythm was the only thing that was holding this piece together.
Yeah.
You know? But here are the piano chords. He It keeps bringing them back. Dun, dun. Gonna do it again.
Like, who is this? who is this composer who just decided that this was just gonna work? Was just gonna do it. Vibe change.
Total vibe change. I love it too.
Yeah.
I also love the timbre that they use for the electronic instruments because they almost sound human.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of robotness, just like Rag.
Okay, I see you. So fucking good.
Fucking like dubstep wobbles in there.
I know.
Over the top of this, it feels ancient, but it has some sort of like weird,
like a warbling
robot.
underneath it.
Yeah, it's just like motherboard sounding. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's
I mean, I did reference Star Wars up in my notes.
A great job of combining the humanness and roboticness of, in particular, Reg. But I have a feeling that the more we learn about the Abyss, the more we're going to realize that the silicone side and the carbon side are
right.
Working pretty closely together.
Yeah.
Is that a mandolin?
It kind of sounds like it. I wouldn't be surprised. I fucking love that key bass.
The key bass is amazing.
I fucking love it. Oh.
So that's that song.
Yeah. I also had 17 starred.
Also, okay, 17?
Yeah, I think you had 17 starred.
I don't remember if I did. There's one more thing I had to say about 2 months, too, especially given the title. I'm assuming it's the first 2 months that they're down mm-hmm. in the Abyss. You've explored so much. You've had a drastic vibe change. You have grown. You have you've experienced a lot over the course of these 2 months. And you are different people in just a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Definitely capture that in that song.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what you hear. So, 17, you said.
Yeah.
I also had 17 started. You're right.
I know.
You know. Gallantry and recapitulation. Go ahead with your notes.
Yeah. All I had to say about this, and this is how much I loved it. I said, I love this piece. It's so seemingly simple, but every harmonization, and I stopped writing. Because I just listened to the song.
It made me do that too. I feel like some of these songs needed more notes and I got caught up in listening.
It was really, 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 really hard to take notes because there are so many different elements that you had to listen to and it's hard to write about all the elements that are happening at once in
yeah.
in one writing session.
Exactly.
You can only write so much at a time.
Well, I have so energetic, building into something really, really big. Then it brings you back down, so you have to listen. You have to listen in. But it never loses energy, even when it brings it back down. It feels like a race. It's making me write super fucking fast. That's the line. Love the horn swells. It brings you back again, and then it feels like it could go on forever. Way to bring us out. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice way to bring us out. I thought, so as I'm writing this, I want you guys to know that like I'm writing in time with the song. So
yeah.
Some of these things may not make sense to you right away, but you will as we listen here. So let's go to that one, number 17, Gallantry and Recapitulation. Here it comes.
But it's like the chords that they're using, you've heard them before. It seems so simple.
Oh,
it's something you've heard.
This is a very, very common
chord
progression.
But the way that he just turned it into his own. Just.
This is one of the chord progressions that I learned when I was in composition school.
Yeah. It's Vivaldi used it.
And just keep building it. And this is one of those like chord progression loops that may never resolve. It could go on forever.
Yeah. They just come up and then they just go as fast as they came. What the f-
It's so good. You notice how they wait? They stop with the horn swells?
Yeah.
They left the horn swells out for a minute. But they brought something else in. And the horn swells come back.
Yeah. I also like that the horns don't finish at the same time. They swell over each other. The first time we listened to it, but I couldn't write it down.
That's because it just, it does that to you. Like,
yeah.
It'll bring it back again and start over.
And it just takes you to a place of familiarity, this, like, and then you have this ending.
He picked this note here with this pad that is not that, I can't tell, it tricks me into thinking that it's the tonic, but it's not. And for one chord, it makes it very dissonant.
Mm-hmm.
What a way to bring us out. Seriously. That was like beyond, that was beyond textbook. That's a song that if you, it's like I said, you could just keep going and it'll never end. It's one of those things you can just loop forever. And the fact that he brought us out like that by adding this underlying tone and bringing it down, and then this bass wobble, this fucking really pitchy fucking swell of a bass, it allows you to ease your way out of it and come out of the chord progression.
Yeah.
And I put that in air quotes too. I just say that every time now. So yeah, amazing, amazing piece. Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Well, what else do we have starred? Holy shit.
I got goosebumps again after listening to that track. Ugh. This is going to be a long episode.
a song that, like, it kind of reminds me of is Contact by Daft Punk. And the only reason it reminds me of it is because it's one of those chord progressions that just goes on forever.
Oh, yeah.
It was very, yeah. It was. If you haven't heard that song, go listen to it. Daft Punk's pretty fucking amazing,
the shit.
Too. All right, what's next?
I had 19.
I didn't start that one.
Okay. This had a fucking great string part on it. It seemed really nostalgic to me. And it, like, wait, what did I say?
I did not have many notes for that one. I think I was just mesmerized.
Yeah, I said it seemed so nostalgic, but probably because the characters become important to you. That was Swings and Roundabouts.
So the next one I had starred was 24.
I didn't have 24. Actually, I had no notes for 24.
Really?
No notes.
So this one's called Depths of the Abyss. And I starred it, and next to the star I put Interview. Interview question mark. I think that's because, like, the let's see, it's I put gotta add some dark and distant bass stingers if we're talking about depth, you know. So much juxtaposition, the bass doesn't match the keys. The keys are a separate entity entirely in this musical space. I really think, I know you didn't star that one, but I think we should listen to it.
That's fine.
I think this is what he means by the colors and juxtaposition that he was trying to go for.
If I didn't write notes, it's probably because I was entranced by the first few bars.
Depths of the Abyss. Here it comes. That just screams cave tone.
Yeah.
You guys see how the piano and the abyss those pads are two separate things. Both of them feel alive. Weird sample in here. Like there's another incomprehensible power trying to communicate with this piano.
I love how the notes linger.
Yeah.
The notes linger.
What a fucking piece. Wow.
We're going to say that about every single one. Don't you worry.
Go watch this show. I don't know how you've gotten this far and haven't seen it yet.
Absolutely.
If that's the case.
100% of you may have actually watched it, and that was for nobody.
Yeah, you're right. Not a single soul. All right, on to the next one.
So, again, I didn't have anything starred. I know that we both very much like Disc 2. So we should just go by yours. You pick a star out of the first.
Oh, man, I have too many stars.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Enough. I have none.
I started 5, 6, and 7 right out the gate.
I didn't start starring until 13.
We are about an hour 15. I know I need to edit some stuff in or out. But how many songs would you like to do? I know we haven't even touched disc 2 yet.
Yeah, I know. I definitely want to play 13. I said this.
Okay. For 13.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before you do that one, is that the first one you start as 13?
Yeah, that's right. What I'm okay. saying. As long as we play the last one.
All right, before 13, I think I want to play... Let's just do these two back-to-back because they're so weird. Jungle Run and Crucifixion.
Okay.
Let's do those two back-to-back. Let's do 13 since you started. And then let's do 24. Oh, man, but In the Blind is so good. Ah, fuck.
I know.
Indoor Voices. Nope, we'll just do those. We'll leave it to you guys. We'll just do those.
And the last one.
And the last, that's what I mean. I thought I said that. Okay.
You said 24.
Okay. Let's do 5 and 6 first. So number 5 is Jungle Run.
I said, I feel like more than half of this show consists of running.
Yeah. But this one's like a fun run.
Yeah. It's a jungle run. This one also has random vocals. I said, these random vocals are so unexpected. It's a nice touch.
Now I want to know if maybe that this song was like where they're running away from Nanachi the first time they like sense her in the vicinity.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that for sure. I'm just grasping at straws here. Because they're like having fun trying to escape almost. They think she's a threat.
But they don't really know.
But then the next song is what makes you think like, oh, maybe they ran to that fucking orb guy.
Yeah.
Ugh. That was haunting.
Ugh.
I love the organic.
Random voices.
I love the organic percussion, the ancient thing that this voice yeah. gives. And the bass is super, like, computer. timbre they chose for that little melody there. It screams reg so much because it's mildly robotic, a little bit innocent and cheesy.
It's super trancy.
Well, with the voice on it.
Yeah. But even the background percussion.
I was talking about that melody line.
I was making a totally different remark.
Yeah.
I was in my own head. Sorry. I think I was thinking about, like, if I were at a music festival and that came on, I would totally dance to it.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't not dance to it.
I know.
It's too fucking groovy. All right. Immediately following that song, here is Crucifixion, excuse me, is coming right up. This is why I thought it was so weird.
Oh, yeah. I remember. The end of my notes was, what a dark track.
I think this was when they ran into that
weird,
was it called Orb Weaver?
Orb, yeah, Orb, I don't know.
Orb Penetrator, whatever the hell it is.
That got me.
The tones in this are absolutely not organic.
No.
But they're used very organically. Like, you don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I said, whoa, this is chaotic as fuck.
And there's no rhythm.
And the chaos comes in the form of synthesizers and percussion, playing in an anxiety-inducing beat that builds dynamically. What a dark track. Like, I hope you have headphones on right now.
Or are in, like, a home theater.
Yeah.
So much fucking chaos.
I just want to say, fellow listeners, that if I could buy you all nice headphones to listen to our podcast, I would do that for you because I need you to experience what you experience in nice headphones when that song is like coming at you at your left ear and something in your right ear is like invoking a totally different thing. It is crazy how they panned that. It is crazy the rhythm they chose, if or lack thereof.
Yeah, I don't know where his head was at when he was like
was he Joker style or
that was maniacal, man. That was fucking murderous.
Yeah.
That was killer fucking kill or be killed.
You know, I know we talked about the songs that we were going to play.
Yeah.
We discussed this. But I feel like we should also touch a little more on the full version of Underground River. Not play it, but talk about it.
Okay.
Because we didn't really talk about what makes it different than...
Yeah, you're right. I think that is totally fine. Let's talk about it.
I was truly expecting a counter.
No, let's fucking talk about it.
Cool. So... I said, I love how they refit this track to fit the anime in the different parts. This version has a lot more synth and percussion to it, which is still cohesive to the OST. There was a whole horn breakdown that adds a different texture to everything else happening in this piece.
Yeah. I put much more dramatic. It doesn't ease you in at all, like the first one did, especially those strings. It is much busier. This adventure is serious, and you are going to have to mature in order to get through it. Your life is changing, and I really like the brass timbre. It's the horn section that mm-hmm. we were just talking about. Over the top of the music box kind of timbre.
Yep.
And this one creates a lot of dissonance and drama throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. It was worth noting that this exists on the second disc because
it is a very different version.
It is a very, very different version. With
almost the same vocals, if not the same.
They are the same vocals.
The same exact vocals.
They are
vocals.
The same exact vocals.
Cool.
And it was really funny because when we played this the first time, Garrett's like, I don't know if I see the difference. And I was like, no, go back. And then I was like, now press play on the other one. Okay, now press play on that one. He's like, oh, yeah, that's super different.
Yeah.
And it is. It is the first one, very calming, very ethereal, very just.
You're at the. At the precipice of fucking of the abyss. You're just getting to know this.
And this one really kind of goes into more of a detail about the abyss. You know, you're not just looking at the aesthetic, the vastness of it. Now you're in the nitty gritty. You're actually feeling everything that's in that underground river.
Yeah,
for sure. It's not just beautiful. It's also dangerous.
It's fucking terrifying. You're not at the top of the food chain. Not anymore. Let's see. Then we have Walking the Tightrope and Relinquish. Number 13, the one you start.
Number 13. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to play that one?
Yeah.
Let's play it. I don't really have that many notes for this one. I put, this song is badass. So many changes. Whoa. I need to hear this in context again. Very, very epic.
Yeah. I didn't write very many notes for this. And I just wrote, these violins sound crazy.
We were captivated by this, obviously. That's what happens when we don't write many notes. There's one of two reasons. Usually then, with not that many notes, we're like, whoa, the song's crazy. If there's a lot of notes or just like, this song was lame, then you'll get that on the notes.
Or there's some that just make you want to write 13. Everything down.
Exactly. Or make you write faster.
Right, yeah.
Fuck. All right, this one is number 13, Relinquish.
Anxiety. But like, can you hear the way that he's almost staccatoing those notes? Because he's like, he's letting his bow like bounce on the strings. So it sounds incredibly like, it's like he's running. Like, get out of here.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Now the whole section is doing it. You can hear when their bow bounces. And they pause. There's a slight half rest where they pause to go to the next sequence.
I love that scraping sound.
And then what? I'm sorry.
So
you did this?
To me, this feels like rises. It's got to be Rex Cannon.
It has to be. We're building
Relinquish.
Up. We're getting.
This
get
is very Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like Luke fucking Skywalker just whipped out his goddamn lightsaber and was like, look at this. About to get sliced.
Look at this lightsaber, bro.
Man, that fucking piece is awesome.
And that's why I said this, and I put an exclamation point and I underlined it twice with a star next to it.
Isn't even over yet. Still got 40 seconds left. You know, that sounds like another piece that I actually had put notes for.
Was it Reg's Power?
Probably. That makes sense. Because what I thought he was describing with the music was the fact that Reg's power is super intense and often out of control.
Yes.
And immediately after, I mean, he captures all that super intensity, out of control kind of nature, the very epicness of it. He captures the laser, the relinquisher. What is it called? Incinerator. That's what it's called. The incinerator. He captures that power really well musically. But the thing that I feel like a lot of people forget about is that he falls asleep after he uses it. Mm-hmm. He passes out. And that whole pads and dreaminess and the way he comes out of the piece itself is like, oh shit, here comes the
sleep.
I'm being lulled to sleep now.
Yeah. Oh, good job, baby.
Thank you for recognizing that too. Do you want to play Reg's power then? That's number 17.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, that is the one I put. Yeah, he definitely powers the fuck up. Awesome. That's my notes. Super heavy hitting and catches you off guard. Also, almost set up his need to sleep at the end of the piece. That's what I have written right there. Perfect. Reg's power, number 17. Here it is.
I said Star Wars Death Star vibes.
Kind of does have a Death Star in the palm of his hand, doesn't he?
Sci-fi cinematic experience.
For real.
I wrote down a really good point about this song as well. That kind of goes hand in hand with what you were saying.
What's that?
I said this piece is super large.
Very large.
Reg is an unknown force, and he holds a lot of power for someone who doesn't know who or what he is. This piece brings a good balance between that and his personality.
Yeah.
Because this is his personality right here. Very lighthearted. Very just like...
And this is what I mean by the whole sleepy thing.
Yeah.
He's not asleep yet. He still had some power. And I think this is at that point in time where he's like, he knows his power now.
And so that's why when he told Rico, like, no, stay here. I'm about to fall asleep. When I do, don't leave.
Yeah. And I think at this point of the anime... He's probably talking to her like, I'm about to fall asleep. You need to be careful. Like, this is it for me.
Yeah.
For a minute, for 2 hours.
It's such a long time in the abyss. Fuck. Such a good song.
Such a great fucking song. So, yeah, he, I don't know what kind of, it's either his schooling or, Kevin Pinkett, did you do drugs?
That's a valid question, sir. You should answer that. Like, we would like to know.
You see sound so vividly.
I'm telling you guys, go check out that interview. It is super enlightening.
If you went to music school and art school, you probably did drugs at some point.
Yeah.
You tried drugs.
You tried.
Can't fool me.
You can't fool me.
This
We've
is all
done
speculation.
It all.
I'm sorry, Kevin Pinkin.
We've done it all.
Sorry, Mr. Pinkin. That's all speculation.
Before we move on, I think we should also talk about number 18 since we both starred that one, correct?
Yeah, In the Blind.
Yes. I loved how raw this song started. It almost sounds like they're warming up for something. The progression is used a lot throughout many other famous composers, but it being used in this way is quite different than anything you'd hear from a standard issue orchestral composer. Holy shit. Those are my notes. Thank you.
I like
coming.
Your notes.
Thank you for coming to this TED Talk.
I have, what is going on underneath the dramatic violin? It sounds like it's panicking almost, moving up an octave. Oh
my God. Yeah.
Bring in the bass. Bass is here. Let's add some more shit. Blossom it outward. Cool. Yeah. I do write an awful like free thought there.
You write like you're talking to somebody while you're writing your notes.
I'm talking to myself as the song is playing. All right, let's listen to it.
Are we listening to 18?
Yeah, let's fuck it.
Okay, cool.
Let's fuck it.
Let's fuck it.
What the fuck did I say? Let's listen to it.
I'm a weirdo. Like, see, it sounds like they're warming up. Like, the band behind, the orchestra behind is warming up for something.
I think this was the big space that he recorded in. This is one of the things that he talked about in his interview. Small ensemble.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're in a huge space.
But it does. It sounds like a distorted warm-up room. See, that's a progression. Every famous composer has made it, but it's nothing like this. This whole song just sounds so raw and emotional, and it's crazy. Now the two themes are kind of blending a little bit more better.
Now this is a motif that I think appeared again. Now that I'm listening to it again, I feel like I've heard this before. It feels familiar. Love the pads on the song. Whoa. If that was a warm up, yeah, Kevin Pagan just walked into the fucking room and they're like warming up and he goes, "No, keep going."
I hope that's how that happened.
That's how the song was recorded.
That's pretty amazing.
All right. What? Let's do one more. Well, I guess we have to do two more.
Do we have to do two more?
Well, yeah. You want to do 24.
I didn't say 24.
You want to do the last song?
That's 27.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. 27. And I think maybe we can even play 27. That one's a very long song.
That is.
We could probably play it and then kind of go into our outro.
We can, but I feel like it doesn't capture...
It doesn't. That song's like almost 7 minutes long.
I don't want to talk over that song.
We can't play that whole song. You know that, right?
I know. It's so good. Okay. Either we play it or we don't play it at all.
Okay. It's not 7 minutes long. It's 4.5 minutes long, which is still too long to play.
If we play it, we can't do the outro over it. We can't do that.
Why not?
Because I'm not ruining that song.
All right. That's
I'm
fair.
Just not.
Well, show it some love. Show it some respect. All right, then. So now you know. Go listen to number 27.
Please.
It's called Tomorrow.
Do me a favor. But we should talk about it. We should give our thoughts on
it. You don't want to do one more? Are we done?
No. Let's talk about it and then do one more.
No, let's do that one first and then let's talk about 24. 27.
Stop.
I think it's because 24 is at the bottom of my page here. Keep reading
it. Stop. Okay, well, did you want to play... number 25?
Sabretooth?
Yeah.
No, let's not play 25. That one is a very terrifying song.
It's treacherous.
I said treacherous.
It's treacherous and horrifying. You even get that cinematic descending progression and then it ascends on the second time around. It goes down and then it goes down and then it goes up.
Something I did notice for 20, 21, and 22.
Let's see what the notes say.
We don't really have to talk about so much of the notes, more of just this was three songs in a row that just, I thought were put weirdly together.
Yes, they were. Especially because number 20 was kind of dancey.
Yeah.
Number 20 was kind of dancey. And then you move on to number 21, which is super broody.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all, and then you get Mirage.
Which was synthesizers used in the most perfect way.
Yeah, definitely. And then right after that, you have Indoor Voices, which is, I think, the last one that I starred before Sabretooth and Tomorrow. So let's play Indoor Voices.
Okay.
That was not enthusiastic enough.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Enthusiasm Police.
I am the enthusiasm police, bitch.
No, I don't care. I like all of these songs.
Okay.
I just didn't, with 23, I was just like intrigued by it. I wrote, what an interesting track. The tones and the volume just seem off. Like, it just seemed like it should have been somewhere else, but it also sounded perfect. I just didn't understand. I was so intrigued by it.
And to me, this is another reg song.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
I was like, I love this super, super organic groove with this computer motherboard sounding bass on it. It's like a human heart inside a robot body.
Okay.
Which I think is the perfect way to describe Reg, because although aspects of him look human, he's definitely more robot on the outside, but he's got emotion. So yeah. He's not a robot.
Right. He's an android.
He's a fucking relic of the abyss.
I am a relic.
Here
I
it
bet
is
that was
in
how the English
voices.
Dub sounded. I am a relic.
You think that's the English dub?
That's
are you,
probably.
Are you Reg's voice?
Yes.
God, you're a fucking weirdo. All right, here it is. And the reason I say human heart inside a robot body is because, well, drums are kind of like the heartbeat of music. And listen to those drums. Super organic.
I
can
hear
the fucking heads wobble on the toms.
I like how the two, like, the beats come together the way that they do. Interesting track is an understatement.
I have no idea where the fuck this song goes. Like, yeah. In the anime. I mean,
I have no idea. And, like, he makes you think he's going to come back around with it.
No, there's only
but he doesn't.
Five, four, nope, it's
yeah,
pretty much
no,
done.
It's done. But that's what he makes it sound like at the very end. He's like, oh, I'm picking it back up now. Nope. I'm ending the song.
Yeah. I think that's probably all we have to do. There's so much in this OST, and nothing that we can play, especially all the shit that we talk over, is going to do it justice. So that's it for me. I mean, I don't have any more notes.
I still want to talk about number 27.
Let's talk about number 24.
27. 27.
All right. That time I did it on purpose.
Ugh. All right. So my notes were, what the fuck does tomorrow even hold for these characters?
Did you write a whole page of notes?
Huh? No.
Okay. Sorry, I saw your page. It looked like an entire, like, did
no,
you write a poem
this
about
is
the
only
song?
Three tracks.
You wrote a poem about the song.
I was feeling it, man.
I was feeling it, bro.
All right.
All right, go ahead.
What the fuck does tomorrow ever even hold for these characters? Are their friends going to see it tomorrow? It doesn't even fucking stop them from finding out. And what a track to take you out of the OST. It sums it up entirely to a T. It is so emotional, and you have an up and down, and you feel darkness, and you feel hope, and you hear vastness, everything. You just hear everything. And it is such a beautiful track.
Those are your notes?
Those are my notes.
You have a lot of notes.
Thank you.
I put, that was a hell of a fucking ride. This is a great way to end the OST. It's uplifting, but doesn't ignore all the previous drama. I'm relieved and anxious, you know, waiting to move forward into the next chapter of the adventure. Wow, those vocals.
Yeah. And this is another thing. So we didn't really hear a bunch of tracks that we've played for you with the random vocals that I was speaking on, but you kind of heard them in the middle of the song on the one song that we did hear it on. But this one comes in at the very end.
Yeah, it gets
it comes
you.
In at the very end. It's crazy.
It gets you.
Yeah.
Man, I really want to play it for you, but I think we'll leave that last one to you guys. It's been a kind of a long recording day, hasn't it?
It has.
This is a fun show.
If there's any show that you recommend to your friends about our podcast, please tell them this one. I'm already telling you. I already know that I did a better job on than any other OST I've ever done it before.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. I'm growing as a podcaster.
Look at you. I know. Look at you grow.
I know. You guys were here to witness it. It's beautiful.
Well, yeah, I think that this is it's definitely one to recommend to your friends. Newbies, I think they might be, I mean, I wasn't weirded out by the whole humiliating, like,
yeah,
stringing people up naked sort of thing. Like I said, it wasn't sexual. You can recommend it to your friends. Your parents could watch it. It's not going to be weird.
And also, Attack on Titan exists, and there's a bunch of naked fucking giants rocking around. So, that's not even a concept.
Annoying. This show is so amazing that I would say it is definitely a great one for newbies. Any anime newbies, you've never seen anime before, you could definitely watch this as your first one.
Yeah.
You could easily watch this as your first
especially one. Especially because it's everybody.
Short. It's short now.
Yeah.
There's going to be a second season. Do you know when it comes out? Or was it just announced?
Probably next year.
Hopefully next year.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, share that with all your friends. Comment on our Instagram if you guys liked this one too. We'd like to get your feedback as well.
Yeah, I could be just pulling shit out of my ass, and I think I just did the best episode we've ever recorded. And you're like, Emily, you suck.
Emily, that was terrible. So yeah, please get engaged with us on Instagram, and I will leave the rest of that infamous outro.
No, we still have fun facts.
Oh, there's still fun facts?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
You crazy person.
Shit, our show isn't even over.
Yeah, so I've got fun, fucking fun ass facts. That's what I got for you.
Ass fucking fun facts. So, fun ass fucking facts.
Stop it. The sumo wrestler Shodai Nioa says Maiden Abyss made him cry. And then he made his fellow wrestlers watch it, and they also ended up crying. Everybody was crying. And I don't know why it's so amusing to think of a bunch of sumo wrestlers sitting in a room crying. It is the most beautiful thing.
Is that amusing to you?
It's amusing. Like it's like oxymoronic. You know, these people have been training as sumo wrestlers pretty much their entire lives. And then they're all in a room crying about Maiden Abyss, and it just makes my heart so happy.
It was, yeah, it's that good, see?
Yeah. So when first writing the manga, Tsukushi called it Hello Abyss. The editors said, nah, they weren't for it.
I would agree with that. Maiden Abyss is a better name.
Yeah, yeah. So to go along with our dark themes, Tsukushi took inspiration from the game Bloodborne, which is
love that fucking game.
Heavily influenced by Lovecraft. So it totally makes sense that these monsters that you see in this anime look like they're straight out of a Lovecraft novel, because they kind of are.
I mean, they're amazing, beautiful monsters.
They're beautiful, damn it.
I mean, they're beautiful and terrifying.
They are very terrifying.
Especially the orb one.
I know.
Oh my God. What a horrifying scene. I'm traumatized.
I'm thoroughly traumatized. That was pretty awful.
I'm going to have PTSD from that fucking scene.
Stop it. Okay, guys, I will now take you out with my infamous line.
Perfect. Bring it on.
Wonderful. My lovely people out there, whether you are cozied up with your own BBC or you're just taking us with you for the ride, we are thrilled to be sharing our love of anime, music, and sound effects with you people.
Great. That was a good one. That was a great, very enthusiastic. Enthusiasm nailed.
Thanks.
The enthusiasm police approve.
Awesome.
If you could do just one more thing for us, or just, you know, five or six more things for us. I know I say it every time, go to our Instagram. It is really becoming a community out there, and we love hearing and talking to you guys about anything and everything anime or whatever's happening in your life. We like you guys. The other thing, oh yeah, Instagram is in the show notes for sure. The other thing that's going to be in our show notes, two new things, really, two big ventures that we've been working on.
We've been busy.
We have been super busy. All of our merchandise is on Etsy. except t-shirts, which should be out there by tomorrow. And if you would like to support us, we have our Anime Noise logo on our shirt. We have a bunch of, we had three really good artists commission some artwork for us. A ton of fan art and stuff like that. So go head out there. We have stickers. We have five by seven prints, and we have buttons out there for you guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Three different artists, 14 total designs.
Yes.
So go check those out. There's going to be a link in the show notes for the Etsy store, or you can see our shop on Instagram, which was acting a little weird today. We got to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Took off all of our products except for three. And then the other thing that we've been working on is our YouTube channel. We are going to be creating a live stream it's a 24-hour live stream of music and some meditation, some workout music, at least with the Vegeta video. That one's going to be mostly workout music. But it's going to be on a 24/7 live stream here in the near future. So there are two videos out there right now. It is Rain and Lo-Fi and
Goku.
Meditate with Goku. So easily you can fall asleep to those, do chores around the house.
Homework. We have already practiced and we've already decided that they work on sleeping.
Definitely.
Especially the Rain one.
Yeah, the Rain one works really well. So go check those videos out on our YouTube channel. Again, that link is in the show notes. There's also the link to the playlist that we made for all the songs featured in today's episode. Intros and outros and OST.
Yep.
And I think that's all that I have to say. Yes.
And you can find Made in Abyss on these streaming sites.
Tell them.
Yes. We watched it on High Dive. But you can also get it on Amazon Prime, Anime Lab if you're the Australian New Zealand region, and then Wakanim.
I don't know what it is. It's European.
It's European. So if you know what that is, then you know what that is, and you can watch it there. If you know what I'm trying to say. And it applies to you. I'm sure you know what that is at this point.
Fucking fantastic.
Please go watch it on whatever station you can find it
go
on.
Go watch it. Share it with all your friends. Buy the OST. Oh my God, it's
have
so good.
Have a watch party.
Yes. And on that note, guys, tune in next week for another episode of
Anime Noise. Ooh, look at that.
We're getting there. Yeah. I think we need another one, though.
You think so? I don't think we need to, like...
I'm overthinking it. That's just me. All right. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
This has been a Beanbag Chair Media production.